It's my pleasure this morning to introduce to you the Reverend Dr. Jennifer Kwong, who is our contact with the Unitarian Universalist Association Congregational Life Staff. Those of you who were here yesterday as part of our ministerial startup are already familiar with him. Previously, he served our congregation in Honolulu, Hawaii, so he's missing some of his snorkeling, I believe he told me. But he's here today to give our reading and participate in worship with us.
I invite you to hear these words by the Reverend Sean Neil Barron. One day, your church was born. Maybe it was a gathering of saints called together for the common worship of a wrathful God, ceaselessly praying between bout of decrying the evil of Christmas or dancing. Or maybe a few brave souls answered a notice in the newspaper, curiosity piqued by the announcement of a religion where free thinking and tolerance were bedrocks. No matter how it happened, your church was born, a gathering of people, humble, caring, anxious, and quirky all the same time, who covenanted to be with one another on the journey of life, death, and everything in between. And so it began, a faithful few, beautifully imperfect, called to that central task, that human task of connecting, loving, and serving. It was just a baby, and yet it was thrust deep into the human condition, tasked to hold minds and souls, bodies and hearts, along with the roller derby of disease and birth, infighting and joy, and Christmas pageants. Sometimes all of those all the same time. They gathered to hear the world begin to break wide open for insightful sermons, rejuvenating music, and a community whose fierce devotion to each other's well-being rivaled a mama bear's love for her cubs. But it wasn't always like that, of course. There were the trying times, and I don't just mean Phyllis or Jack, those stubborn but lovable souls who inhabit the netherworld of committee meetings. No, I mean the trying times when the church almost split in half over the war over integration, or when the mill left the town vacant, or when the minister crossed that line, and you know what that line is, and the people couldn't speak about it for decades. But somehow, you were still here, still on the town common, still the church that everyone recognizes, still the one that shows up every time you were called on, still using the communion silver until you voted to sell it. New people came and they changed things. Small things, big things. Things that nobody noticed as it happened until suddenly it was hard to even recognize anything anymore. That was a hard moment, a tearful moment. And other things changed too. The proclamations about God once heard loud from the pulpit softened. Wrathful became loving. Distant became intimate. After the war, the nursery and the RE classrooms were overflowing. Each baby dedicated reminded the church of the incredible beauty of life and the gift this community, all huddled around baby, would bestow upon this child. The history of your church is more a story of the determination of love to break forth than it is about tie-dye or chalices, sermon discussions, or social justice committee meetings. The history of the church is the history of human enterprise evolving in its sights and sounds, yet revolving always around its core. The history of your church is the gift of potential and momentum, of baggage and personality. The history of your church is the launch pad from which you spring into action or disarray. Each day, your church is born.
In his book, Dare to Live Now, prolific author and Presbyterian pastor Bruce Larson tells the following story. Travelers across a long and seldom used trail in the Amargosa Desert would pass an old pump that offered the only hope of fresh drinking water along their journey. Wired to the pump handle was a baking powder can, and inside the can was a handwritten note. This pump is all right as of June 1932. I put a new sucker washer into it, and it ought to last 5 years. But the washer dries out, and the pump has got to be primed. Under the white rock, I buried a bottle of water out of the sun, the cork end up. There's enough water in it to prime the pump, but not if you drink some first. Pour about 1/4 and let her soak to wet the leather, then pour in the rest medium fast and pump like crazy. You'll get water. The well has never run dry. Have faith. When you get watered up, fill the bottle and put it back like you found it for the next feller. Signed, Desert Pete. I think congregations are a lot like wells. Our congregations are places where people can quench inner thirst for things as vital and as basic for life as water. Things like acceptance and welcome, forgiveness and inspiration, friendship and justice, and just the assurance that we are enough. And while what we do as a community gives us access to this never-ending fount, the waters in it are meant for us to share with all who are thirsty for what runs deeply through and among us. We sit this morning in a building, a church building, that was funded by people and built by hands, most of which are now gone. From Bernard Maybeck, who gifted the congregation with this land at a discounted price, to Bill Ulp, who chaired the building committee, to Reverend Dr. Ray Cope, who pastored the congregation through the move from downtown Berkeley up here on the hill in Kensington, to all of the parishioners whose energy, commitment, and financial support made our campus possible. From all accounts, this physical space and the breathtaking beauty that surrounds it is part of the well of this congregation, built by our elders and ancestors. And it has been lovingly cared for our congregation. But just as a person is not a 2x4, a church is not actually a building. We sit here as part of a community that stretches way back, farther back than the history even of this structure. We can trace the inspiration for this congregation all the way back to the 19th century Unitarian giant, the Reverend Thomas Starr King. He's the first to have envisioned a large and influential Unitarian church next to the university. A few years later, the Reverend Charles William Wente made Starr King's dream into a reality. He and Dr. Horatio Stebbins founded the First Unitarian Church of Berkeley with 32 charter members. And first they rented meeting space and later built our congregation's first church building at Bancroft and Dana in 1898. This congregation stands on the shoulders of many intellectual and organizational giants. The young founders of the Channing Club, the outspoken Constance Daggett, who led an every member canvass and established a memorial fund to help the church make ends meet during the Great Depression. The Women's Auxiliary, the High Schoolers Elliott Club, on and on. And yet, the line of this church's ancestors extends even farther back than the beginning of this congregation. It extends hundreds of years, and many would even say millennia back in time. Because while Unitarian Universalism is today a proudly pluralist faith, while individuals are welcome to join us from any number of spiritual paths with any number of beliefs and practices and identities, Unitarian Universalism has its own heritage with its own particular history and development, stories and theology. It is a faith rooted in two ancient heretical Christian ideas, a faith shaped by those traditions' decision to merge in 1961, a faith defined by the basic humanist ideas that human beings matter and that the choices we make can change us and the world, a faith uniquely practiced and expressed in every Unitarian Universalist congregation, home, and heart. This is the heritage of this congregation, a heritage which the giants of our faith fought and sometimes died to preserve, a heritage honed and polished through the generations, a heritage that Christian and I took vows at ordination to preach and teach and honor. And so, my friends, I wonder today, as we journey together as a congregation, as we seek to be the well where folks thirsty for love and welcome, acceptance and justice can drink their fill, what instructions are we leaving so the next generation can learn how to prime the pump? How are we keeping covenant with those giants on whose shoulders we stand? How are we keeping covenant with those sitting beside us here today and the many who haven't found us but need the living waters that flow with and through us? No matter how we come to answer those questions in the years ahead of us, let's keep faith together, friends, because through the ages, through thick and thin, through theological changes and cultural revolutions, through moves, generation after generation of work towards justice, the well has never run dry.
The question then for us today is not, will we continue with the legacy we have been given? It is rather, what will we do with it? How will we continue and expand and transform that legacy in our time and place? It would be easy to sit on those shoulders, to be here in the building they built, to sing and worship with the words and forms they have given us, to rest and relax and keep that tradition going just as it is. But I think that would be a waste and a betrayal. Because there is a deeper legacy we have been given to, more than buildings or liturgies or even stories of the past, the deeper legacy of Unitarian Universalism and of this congregation is one of questioning the status quo, of pointing out injustice, of working for greater and greater inclusion and justice, a legacy of going out into the world. This is the legacy of the Universalist Clara Barton, who founded the Red Cross, and the legacy of the Unitarian Horace Mann, who revolutionized education in our country. And once challenged his students to, quote, be ashamed to die until you have won some victory for humanity. I think of Thomas Starr King, also the minister of our neighbor church in San Francisco. For just 4 short years, he served there. His work inspired those who later founded this congregation. Starr King worked tirelessly in those 4 years to keep California as part of the Union during the Civil War, to support the Sanitary Commission, a forerunner of the Red Cross. His speaking circuit around the state was so tough it literally killed him. But he certainly won his victory for humanity. I think 2 of those Unitarian Universalists who marched and showed up for civil rights in the 1960s, including those who died doing so, like James Reed and Viola Liozzo. But it is not enough, as it was pointed out last year, for us to go to Selma and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the March for Civil Rights there if we are also not working for racial justice in our time. This is why the work of Black Lives Matter is important, why our witness in support of it matters. This is why the work of Ceasefire in Richmond, for instance, matters. Why some of us go each week to work to end gun violence. We are working for a victory for humanity. The legacy of this congregation is powerful. As we heard earlier in our reading, the history of your church, of our church, is the gift of potential and momentum, of baggage and personality. The history of your church is the launch pad from which you spring into action or disarray. Each day your church is born. So this great legacy of Unitarian Universalism has so many facets of faith and reason and justice seeking and questioning, to name a few. And so our legacy calls us to question that very legacy, to ask what from the past we must keep and what we must let go of. In this election season, I'm reminded that we are not all equal, though we seek to make that true. Not everyone can vote. Non-citizens and the young and ex-convicts. We have both the stories and the data to know that not all lives are treated equally in our country. Not black and brown lives, or female lives, or those of diverse gender and sexual identities, or poor lives. And so, though I appreciate the sentiment which we will sing in just a few moments in our final hymn, from the words of our once minister here, Frederick Hosmer, he writes, "Not alone we conquer and not alone we fall, in each loss or triumph lose or triumph all." But sadly, we don't all have the same amount at stake. I fear for our country's directions when politicians can brag about sexually assaulting women, or when anti-immigrant and xenophobic rhetoric is so very common. How did we get to this place? And yet we know, don't we? We swim in a sea of troubling messages about who matters and who is better than others and what makes each of us worthy. We get conflicting messages, and I've been reckoning with my own role in all of this. I'm a white, cisgender, heterosexual male from middle-class background, so I carry a lot of privilege. And I know that in my life I have not always acted in ways that I am proud of. I have done things that were hurtful. I have said and done hurtful things and frankly rarely faced any serious consequences for it. So for this, I have huge regrets. And my work is not merely to regret that, but to do better and to help all of us do better. Because this, too, is a part of the larger legacy we all live in a country and society that conditions us to act in certain ways based on who we are and who we are different from. And it is a fantasy to think that Unitarian Universalists are somehow immune to this. Because we too share this legacy, but we also share the legacy to question that and to condemn the hurtful parts of it and to do better. And each day we have a chance. Each day our church is born. So as I learn and look back at the giants whose shoulders we stand on here in this congregation, I'm encouraged that they would tell us to do better than they have, to go farther than they were able to in their lifetimes. So I've been told repeatedly that this congregation is committed to being a diverse, multicultural community, and I've seen glimpses of this in the work we do and the commitments we've already made, but I challenge us to do more. And that will mean going out into the world, because this is work that cannot be done just by staying here on our shining mountaintop. This is work that will be done out in the larger world and here, forging connections and making a community that, based in this beautiful campus, is too large to be contained by it alone. Friends, the work of church is never done and is always starting anew. We stand on the shoulders of giants, and we must rise even higher. We must do the work they could only dream of. And we must inspire even greater dreams in those who come after us. Because each day our church is born. Each day we have a new chance. May we face that sacred responsibility courageously. And may we build a legacy we are proud to share. May it be so.